Crude oil is crude. Natural gas is pure. That's why Pennzoil's base oil is made from natural gas, not crude. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
Pardon the interruption, but I'm Israel Gutierrez. But my friends call me Izzy. What do they call you?
I think you know.
That's not like a complimentary nickname. It's just a fact. It's like if they call me gray-haired Izzy.
A guy on the train, on the platform, saw me yesterday with my luggage. I walked by him. He pointed. He said, "Fill in." I said, "Yes."
Wow.
Filling in.
You're famous. That's
the way it goes. Welcome to PTI. Mike and Tony are off getting exfoliated, so yep. I'm joined by my good friend, Izzy Gutierrez. He's looking sharp. The hair is growing in. He looks great. And we begin today with the breaking news that the New England Patriots have released Antonio Brown. The shocking move comes one day after Sports Illustrated reported that a woman who says Brown made an unwanted sexual advance toward her in 2017 further alleged that she received what she described as intimidating text messages from the Patriots wide receiver. The Patriots said today in a statement, "We feel that it is in the best move in a different direction at this time." Izzy, what is your reaction to everything that happened today?
It's crazy when you think about it, because you're going into this week, you had Robert Klemko, the SI writer, essentially doing the background check on Antonio Brown. Yeah, he did. That the Patriots should have done. But still, no reason to put him on the exempt list, right? It's a civil case that he's dealing with and all this past history. No reason to do so. He gives them, Antonio Brown does, essentially reason to do something by sending these... allegedly sending these texts to this other alleged victim. And now it makes it obvious to me that this was not some orchestrated plan, that he was not in control the entire time. This is a loose cannon, and he seems to be out of control. And when the Patriots cannot have you on their roster after that mess in Oakland, it makes you wonder who will take a chance on this guy ever again. We might have seen, sounds crazy to say this, we might have seen the end of Antonio Brown's career.
Bill Belichick at his press conference today, he was up there, he was asked seven questions, and he finally walked off the stage because every question was about Antonio Brown. But at one point he did say, there are things we're looking into. I believe that the Patriots, when they got Antonio Brown, they said, we're giving you a clean slate. We're going to judge you on everything that happens from this point on. And what happened on Wednesday, those text messages, that's enough. The Patriots said, no, we told you, be on your best behavior. The fact that Antonio Brown is sending what this woman believes are threatening text messages, here you are, you're throwing away money. You could be throwing away your career. And I'm not going to blame it on Drew Rosenhaus, and I'm not going to blame it on Antonio Brown's attorney. This is Antonio Brown thinking he can get away everything.
He's reckless.
And now he ran out of chances.
Why play him last week, Frank? Why go through all that
because,
if you're the New England Patriots?
Because the Patriots said at that time, we're judging you on what you're doing right now. He was on his best behavior. Everything was fine. He could have been playing for the New England Patriots the rest of the season, maybe going to a Super Bowl, and like you said, this could be it for him.
We could have just seen the ultimate crash and burn.
Yep.
It was quite the mini week for the Jacksonville Jags with Jalen Ramsey's trade request and a new starting quarterback developing a cult-like following. Well, Gardner Minshew picked up some more fans Thursday, beating the Titans and Marcus Mariota, who was roughed up all night. Frank, which is bigger, Minshew settling things in Jacksonville or Mariota struggling again?
I'm all about Minshew mania. It's the mustache. It's the way that he played, 20 for 30. Maybe if D.D. Westbrook could catch a ball, he had three drops in the game. But you look at Jacksonville, and with everything that's going on with this team, with Jalen Ramsey asking to be traded, they have to win this game last night. And I know people, it's not a marquee matchup by any stretch of imagination. But if you look at the way that they played, the first week they got Kansas City. That's a tough game.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, though, you know, they were 1 2-point conversion away from winning on the road at Houston. I think Tom Coughlin, Doug Marrone are thinking, we got a chance here in a division that's kind of up for grabs. Why can't it be us? And this quarterback, a 6th-round pick, he's got that it factor, it seems like.
I mean, the reason for optimism, what they needed was somebody better than Blake Bortles. That's it. That was the requirement. And so they got Nick Foles, and you would think he would be really good. Obviously, he got hurt. But Minshew seems like he is better, right? Especially being able to throw the ball downfield. He was 5-for-7 for 114 yards on a touchdown of passes going at least 10 yards downfield. That's the type of activity you want to see from an offense. The other side, though, Mariota, man.
Yeah.
It's hard to judge, right? You get sacked that many times. What did he get sacked? 8 times yesterday?
Nine times. 17 times in 3 games.
18 pressures, and that's a career high. It's frustrating because you can't really assess him. But you've had all this time now, and you get what? An appearance in the playoffs, and that's it. Like, you have no idea what you've gotten this guy. And I think fans in Tennessee are kind of tired of it. But the problem is, the guy who's backing him up, Ryan Tannehill, for 7 years in Miami, did nothing.
I look at the Tennessee Titans, and to me, they're the proverbial 7-9, 8-8, 9-17. Now, the last 3 years, they did finish 9-7, but you just wonder where they're going. They lost the last 2 weeks to guys that started, were going to be backup quarterbacks. Jacoby Brissett and then Minshew last night. So I wonder where they're going. Here's going to be the big thing for Jacksonville. Jalen Ramsey's convinced he's getting traded. Mm-hmm. Do you think he's getting traded?
I think so.
Because they believe they're going to be a playoff team.
I don't think they have that much faith in Gardner Minshew. I think they're going to trade him.
Six-round pick. Mike Leach, pretty good coach. All right, Izzy, as you and I were sitting home complaining about the 15 penalties called in the first half of last night's game, none other than Tom Brady was voicing his displeasure publicly. Brady first tweeted, "Too many penalties, just let us play," 4 exclamation points. Whoa. And then he later tweeted, "I'm turning off this game. I can't watch these ridiculous penalties anymore." 4 exclamation points the second time. Izzy, should Brady be the one criticizing the officiating, and when he does it, does it carry some weight?
That's when you know it's serious, when you get a little willy-nilly with the exclamation points. 3, 4 is kind of crazy. It's an interesting messenger, isn't it? Because didn't we just have a story from a Dolphins player supposedly telling him that a referee told him, "Stay off Tom." And then you've got, you know, he's complaining about holding calls and all this stuff. Well, of course, right? Because if you don't make those holding calls on offense, then you better protect that quarterback and the offense. Look, I understand how difficult defenders or the game has been made for defenders, okay? The one thing we can give them is the actual rules and say, call a holding call and let the offensive players adjust. We've asked so much of defensive players to adjust how they play just to be able to do what they do on a weekly basis. It's okay to ask offensive players to essentially abide by the rules.
Yeah, I love when people used to say, you can call holding every play. Well, last night they almost did in the first half. Now, Mark Maskey of the Washington Post brought up a great point. Tom Brady tweets this out. Then in the third quarter, there were no penalties.
Gone. All gone.
It's almost like Sean Hockley's crew said, you know what, Tom Brady's a little upset. But clearly it's something with Tom Brady. He's being a little selfish here and smart because Tom Brady doesn't tweet all the time. And when he does, he knows it's going to have some impact. We're talking about it. What he's saying is, hang on a second. My offensive line does this all the time. They're protecting me. This league is about the quarterbacks. Don't be calling this many holding penalties.
Yeah.
8 of them in the first half.
In the first 2 weeks, you're talking about a 68% increase in these holding calls, which is, that does not make it fun,
yeah,
right? And
right.
If you have Tom Brady saying this and a bunch of people who aren't really interested in either team and just want to watch good football, they're going to agree with him, right? So everybody's going to say, hey, stop making these calls. And eventually we're going to see these calls go down anyway. That's the pattern that we've seen. But now people are going to credit Tom Brady for lessening those holding calls.
It's funny
calls.
You say that. At the start of the season, there always seems to be something that the referees kind of focus on. And right now it's probably holding because they're waiting for the players. We see this in every sport.
Yep.
It's now up to the players to adjust.
Yep. Ravens defensive coordinator Don Wink Martindale has to prepare for Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs this week, and somehow he's still giddy. He's so because he believes Mahomes versus Lamar Jackson can be the next Brady Manning, and we should all soak it in. Frank, are you as excited about this matchup as our pal Wink?
And by the way, they did nickname him Wink Martindale after the famous game show host and television producer.
Tic-tac-toe.
Wink Martindale. I was going to say, like, Pat Sajak's excited. Alex Trebek is excited. I'm excited because after 2 weeks, both of these quarterbacks, 7 touchdowns, no interceptions. They did meet last year in December in a game that the Ravens needed to win. Kansas City ended up winning the game. What I think is interesting, though, and I think Lamar Jackson, the way that he played against the Chargers in the playoffs did not play well. He's been very good the first 2 weeks. But after week one, when they talked about how great he played as a passer, he said, yeah, not bad for running back. Then he did run 16 times in week two. So that's still part of his arsenal. Meanwhile, Patrick Mahomes, 2 games, 2 rushes.
It has to be part of his arsenal, obviously.
Yeah.
It does what makes him that special, that he can do both now. But if you look back at Brady Manning, obviously they weren't playing against each other necessarily, right? What made that entertaining? It was watching them control the game. It was seeing what they could do, right? You watch these two quarterbacks, they can do the same thing. You feel like they have control of the game. I mean, Patrick Mahomes in that one quarter gave you everything you want to see. Explosive touchdown plays, boom, boom, this game's over. I've got to win. Well, these guys can do the same thing that Manning and that Brady can do, but they bring that other element, you know, whether it be the no-look passes, whether it be the runs with just that lightning quickness. I want to watch each of these guys play. If they're going to be in the same game, I'm going to want to watch it every single time.
Yeah, and no disrespect for the Dolphins, that's who Baltimore beat week one, and then last week at home they get Arizona. It's a different level of competition going on the road. Meanwhile, Kansas City has won both of its first 2 games, and those were both road games. And when you start talking about Brady and Manning, they met 17 times, regular season and playoffs. And usually the victor of that is going on to a Super Bowl, and chances are that they're winning. So you hope that maybe this could be the next generation of guys and they can get to that level. But it's not about really the regular season. Right. They're going to be judged on how they do in the playoffs. Mahomes, good last year, not so
Lamar Jackson's going to be judged on how he throws the ball downfield,
yes.
Right? Passing 15 yards downfield so far, 57% completion, 3 TDs, no interceptions.
To me, that's what's impressive. Did not play well in the playoff game, but has played well since. That's good for him. All right, the best story of the night took place in New Orleans. That's, of course, where a lot of good stories take place. That's where Tulane, trailing by 21 points, defeated Houston 38-31. On a last-second touchdown, the winning two-play drive began with 21 seconds left when Tulane quarterback Justin McMillan pretended to take a knee, but instead handed the ball off to Amari Jones for 18 yards. And if that trickeration wasn't enough, McMillan then threaded the needle to wide receiver Jalen McCleskey for a game-winning 53-yard touchdown. All right, Izzy, wild ending last night. So do you credit Tulane? Or are you going to shame Houston here?
A little bit of both. And what I'm going to shame Houston is not so much that three guys couldn't tackle one guy on the game-deciding play over there. It was, I'm going to rewind a little bit and go before that fake kneel down where Houston was basically right on the goal line. Keith Corbin dropped a gift of a touchdown that would have given him the lead just right through his hands. He felt terrible about it. Couldn't have possibly felt worse after that result. So that I have to shame him a little bit because they should have had that lead and been in control of that game. But man, who has a fake kneel down? what are the situations where that's going to work? There's this one, and I can't really think of another one, and they accomplished it and pulled it off. And then at the end there with that inability to tackle that guy, you can blame all you want. You know, those plays kind of happen. But the fake kneel down, you just got to give like a standing ovation for that.
The only thing is they're called the Green Wave, and they're home, and they're wearing light blue uniforms. They look a little bit like North Carolina. I mean, I know they have a little green in the helmet, but you are the Green Wave. I look at, you remember Boise State once did this in the Fiesta Bowl? Oh. Many moons ago, Nebraska also did it in an Orange Bowl, these trick plays. But if you're Houston here, FBS teams going into last night's game had been 80-0 when winning by at least 21 points at some point in the game. And Tulane comes back and wins that game.
They were down 28-7. And talk about using, taking advantage or being efficient with your throws, right? Justin McMillan, the Tulane quarterback, he only completed 7 passes.
Yeah.
3 of those were for touchdowns, and 2 of those touchdowns, 38 yards, 53 yards. They got exactly what they needed in this game. It was so much fun.
How about Houston coach Dana Holgorsen, who says after the game, it's completely unacceptable on every level to let them go 70 yards in 14 seconds.
But at least it was fun for us.
Pretty good ending. Better than the Jacksonville, Tennessee game. All right, let's take a break. But coming up, Adam Gase says he has no problem with the Patriots running it up. Will Adam Gase feel the same way after Sunday?
And what will Notre Dame do against Georgia tomorrow? Our predictions next.
Of course, the Patriots, no Antonio Brown. What is he doing to his career and his life, maybe?
Crazy to think about. Turned that quickly.
Izzy and I have written millions of words in our careers, so let's see who can come up with the better ones in What's the Word. What do we got first?
It's blank that Adam Gase likes seeing Bill Belichick run up the score.
All right, Adam Gase was asked about this because the Patriots last week in Miami, 43-0. Tom Brady threw a touchdown pass with 2:10 left. They were up 37-0. They blitzed late in the game. So Adam Gase said, I like it, but that's just me. When he was asked, is it bad sportsmanship? He said, no, this is the NFL. It's not peewee football. But I think this is foreshadowing. The Jets are a 22.5-point underdog. Chances are Bill Belichick against the hated Jets going to run up the score.
I think it's pathetic. I think it's just pathetic, and it's not really anything
the Jets are pathetic or
about Adam Gase. But yes, I think everything that revolves around the New England Patriots in the AFC East is generally pathetic. It's why they've been not why, but it helps. It's helped them be as great as they were and dominate that division as long as they have. I think I'm going to applaud him for running up the score. And I mean, you're just
He also wants to be Bill Belichick.
Yeah, he does.
He's kind of kissing his rings the way that Rex Ryan said that he wasn't. Here's the thing, though. Tom Brady has played all 131.
Every snap.
But I also think that's the right thing to do. The season has just started. You want to get in a rhythm. You don't want your team to kind of lose an edge. There's always a method to Bill Belichick's madness, and the madness is usually in February when they're playing for a Super Bowl.
But it's okay to be a little bit critical of him. It's okay to just throw a little bit of shade his way because you would say that about any other coach. What are you doing? Your quarterback's 42 years old. He's played every snap. It's winning 76-3. Stop throwing touchdowns in the fourth quarter.
And that's against your former assistant coach, Brian Flores,
right.
too.
There you go.
All right, what do we got next?
Notre Dame will travel to Georgia and blank.
All right, so that's number 7, Notre Dame, at number 3, Georgia. I'm going to say survive, because if you look at Notre Dame, since 1999, they're 1-18 against top 5 teams. I still think that Notre Dame, big underdog, I think it's 13 points.
14.5.
It's gone up since we've been on the air. I think Notre Dame could lose the game, and I know a lot of people are going to go nuts when I say this, but still be in contention for one of those playoff spots because their schedule is not that tough. So the big thing for Notre Dame, survive. Keep the game close.
I think it's the problem when you want to say, okay, they can lose this game and still make it to the semis, to the college football playoff, when they made it last year and scored 3 points.
Yeah.
You know, they seem to, so my word is underwhelm. They're going to go out to Georgia and underwhelm because it's kind of what they do, right? You're going to face an SEC team that's 8th in the FBS in rushing, 280 plus yards, and you're terrible stopping the run so far. Notre Dame is 120th. So you're talking about an SEC team running it up on you. It could, now, Ian Book, he hasn't made any mistakes. He's doing well. If they can keep it close, like you said, maybe there could be something interesting there, but this should be the type of mismatch that spread is showing.
And Notre Dame later in the season, they'll get Stanford, USC, and of course Michigan, but the schedule's not that difficult. All right, what do we got next?
If UCF beats Pitt tomorrow, the pollsters will blank.
Well, I'm going to say that they're going to shrug. Right now, UCF is 15th in the country. They just blew out Stanford 45-27. They are 28-1 in their last 3 seasons, but no one wants to put them in the Final Four because in the NCAA basketball tournament, we love the underdog. We love the small school. Not in college football. Not until you expand it to 8 teams.
I don't really understand this. My word is panic. I think they're going to panic because they know it's going to be another year of having to figure out what to do with UCF. They're not really going to have another tough test coming after this. They beat Pitt last year, by the way, beat them badly by about 30 points, and then watched Pitt go ahead and play in the ACC, win the Coastal Division. So my thing with UCF is you just don't want to give them enough credit because they're not an established program. When they're doing this, even after Mackenzie Milton goes down with his leg injury and they still show this type of level of play, you have to give them credit. They should at the very least be in the top 10 after this and be in position to be in that
semifinal. Lane Kiffin is right. Everyone is looking at the name. I'm all for UCF getting to that Final Four. I just don't think it's going to happen. 15th in the country, like I said. All right, what do we got next?
The Yankees should feel blank heading into the postseason.
I think they should feel cautiously optimistic, and here's why I'm going to say that. Well, it fits together, dash, cautiously optimistic. 100 wins in a row for the second straight year. They're going to win the division first time since 2012. Chances are they'll get Minnesota. They dominate Minnesota. Since 2002, the Yankees are 86-35, so they own the Twins. The problem is the Houston Astros, the team that knocked them out 2 years ago. Houston's pitching is better than the pitching that the Yankees have. So great season. Did it with a lot of minor league players that came up and did well. Cautiously optimistic.
Undeterred. I think they should be undeterred. If you look at their season, everybody's telling them why they shouldn't be able to win, right?
Yeah.
The starting pitching's been a problem. 30 players on the injured list throughout the year. No Giancarlo Stanton. And they're still doing this, right? And they still have more hits. They're taking more hits. Diego Herman, who's 18-4 with a 4.05 ERA. He's done for the season. Placed on administrative leave. Won't pitch again because of the MLB and Players Association domestic violence policy. So there are all these reasons why they just can't win, 100 wins rolling into there's no formula for winning in the playoffs. You're going to win somehow. The way they've been doing it, not the normal way, but it's been working.
And the Yankees lost Dellin Betances. He's big in the bullpen. Severino has come back. But when I look at the playoffs, I look at Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander. Houston has the pitching around. Yankees could kill it. They are savages, like Aaron Boone said, but the players are a little bit different. All right, that's it. Let's take one last break, but still to come, a rare highlight for the Orioles.
And is Daryl Morey to be believed when he calculates that Russell Westbrook has increased the Rockets' title chances by 30%?
For the ooze, as they say in Maryland. By the way, you see Russell Westbrook and James Harden boxing together.
Wasn't that impressed, really.
It wasn't.
Sorry.
Not a good look. It's the Friday edition of Happy Time, people. Happy 28th birthday tomorrow. Carlos Martinez, the Cardinals closer, blew a 3-run lead last night to the Cubs, only to be rescued in the top of the 10th by Matt Carpenter's home run off Craig Kimbrell, who is making his first appearance in 18 days. Waiting for Carpenter on the top step of the dugout was Martinez, who splashed Carpenter in the face with a cup of water. Meanwhile, the water on Wilbon's face, those were actual tears as his beloved Cubbies lost at home.
Big start for Jack Flaherty, too. He's been great. 8 innings last night.
Excellent. Happy anniversary, Brett Favre, on this day 27 years ago. You made your first appearance for Green Bay, rallying the Packers to a late win over the Bengals after Don Majkowski went down. Majkowski from University of Virginia, by the way. Favre certainly made the most of the opportunity, starting every game at quarterback for the Packers for the next 15 seasons, which included a Super Bowl win in 1996.
I wanted Majkowski to be good so bad. The Magic Man.
He had a good hair work and everything. Happy trails, Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s home run. Orioles center fielder Austin Hayes robbed Vlad Jr. in the fourth inning with a leaping catch against the wall at Camden Yards last night. Hayes, who has played well since being called up on September 7th, pounded his chest while Vlad tipped his cap. See, why can't we all get along? Anyway, the play was reminiscent of a catch a rookie outfielder for the Angels, a guy named Mike Trout, made in Baltimore 7 years ago to rob J.J. Hardy of a home run. By the way, the announced crowd last night was 10,148. Right.
The pounding of the chest was good, too. He did it twice. Mike Trout did it once.
Tip the cap, too. One omission, Cam Newton has been officially ruled out for Sunday. Kyle Allen is going to start against Arizona. All right, we're running out of show. Let's go to the big finish. The Marlins extended Don Mattingly for 2 years. Does he deserve this?
How could you know? His rosters are usually filled with minor leaguers.
Two years of losing.
The NFL has banned all on-field pyrotechnics until it figures out why a machine caught fire last week in Tennessee. Does that make sense?
Right, you and I would go to a million NBA games. When this happens before games, don't you get like a little scared? You can
every
be
time.
20 feet from there and you can feel the heat
jump
from
out
something
of
like that.
Yep.
It's not good. Daryl Morey tells Bleacher Report that Russell Westbrook increases the Rockets' title chances by 30%. You believe that math from the MIT graduate student?
I believe in basketball. I don't believe in math that much. Team USA stayed number one in the new FIBA basketball rankings. Does that make sense?
How could we lose that many times and get blown out? I guess they're thinking LeBron's going to play Anthony Davis, Steph Curry.
They heard Steph Curry.
Last one, number 10, Utah, USC. Who do you got?
I got the Utes. I mean, why not? It's a tough road game, but, you know, USC, Clay Helton, things not going well for them.
Tony Kornheiser would say your boy, Urban Meyer, is going to be at the game.
Yeah.
We're running out of time. Thanks for watching. I'm Frank Isola.
And I'm Israel Gutierrez. Have a great weekend. You can now watch full episodes of PTI every day on ESPN.com and the ESPN app.
You and I.